So we're here today with Dr. Rachel Bitticoffer, and I hope I said that correctly. Dr. Bitticoffer, welcome to the state of Kentucky.
You got it, and thanks for having me today.
It surprises me when I mentioned that I was interviewing you. Some people, of course, have not heard of you, and then some people were like, oh, you're getting to talk to her. She's wonderful. So You have apparently struck a chord with at least some political activists that I know. Let's talk a little bit quickly about where do you work? What do you do?
Yeah, so just so people have a background on me, I was a professor and a pollster at a little liberal arts college in Virginia. And that's how I started, you know, getting into national politics. I put out a forecast in 2018 about the blue wave. And then I switched after 2020 from the election analysis world to election strategy because the Democrats aren't good at campaigning and electioneering. And so, and I understood the stakes were going to be freedom for millions of people. So I redirected myself to try to see if I could go from a total outsider to having influence over what Democrats do electorally. And, you know, I started off with a super PAC that I couldn't fund because you never want to do that from the working class, folks.
Right.
I don't have a Rolodex, okay? And after that, I was able to develop a relationship and do get some strategy fixed for 2022. And, you know, I work with I don't really tend to name my clients, but Jamie Harrison of the DNC is a big fan of the work. He bought, you know, 3 copies of the book for each leadership team of each state party committee. So the Kentucky Dems came home from Chicago in April with 3 copies of the book. And, you know, I'm happy to say that a lot of people are making the strategic shift, because if we didn't make it, we are going to be in significant trouble, not only in 22, but especially now for the big enchilada here in 24.
Right. So let's back up a bit. I came across your forecasting, and your insights into the elections just seem to me to be so spot on. So why don't you take just a moment and tell everybody about what you based your forecast on and what you saw as the strategic issues that we needed to be addressing?
Yeah, 2 different kind of questions there. Now, my forecasting work was about modernizing election analysis that people consume on the internet, 538, the Cook Political Report, blah, blah, blah. Not to take anything away from the folks that do those things, but having a PhD in political science and my specialty being American voter behavior, I noticed that they were not adjusting mentally. You know, you have to make the mental shift first to how to a thing called polarization, which is not just some buzzword. It means something, okay? And it's a measurable, quantifiable, characteristic change in voters and politicians that have come in the last 20 years. So my forecasting work was about getting them to appreciate the role that polarization and hyperpartisanship play, especially in predicting elections based on in-party, out-party status, okay? Especially for Democrats, because we tend to recede our turnout as soon as we're in power, or at least we have historically, right?
Right.
So, so that work, that's what, you know, my forecasting work was good, was because I was accounting for partisanship. And partisanship accounts for 90% of the variance in vote choice for 90% of the electorate, okay? So it is an incredibly powerful predictor. And then, you know, I can't remember what the second part of that question was.
Well, I remember that one of the things you said that struck me at the time was that it doesn't really help to just go after your base. There's this middle group of people, or non-voters and independent voters, and that's where you need to focus. You don't need to be just working on getting your base out. They're going to come anyway. Now, if I said that wrong, tell me and I'll edit it out.
Yeah, you did. You did, right? No, what I was trying to tell people is, look, Republicans don't have a base and a persuasion pool message. They have one message, okay? It's Democrats are socialists and they're going to turn your boy children into girls, or whatever it happens to be in that particular election cycle.
Right.
Okay? And that they're using that one message to both drive their turnout because they're scaring people who are Republicans about how the scary Democrats are going to do to them. But that same message is pushing swing voters away from the Democratic brand by pooping on the brand, right?
Right.
So what, what I was telling people, I mean, in 2018, the reason I knew there was going to be a giant blue wave is that all the lackadaisical turnout of 2016 was going to get wiped out because Donald Trump ended up winning. Okay. And that was going to galvanize people big time. I mean, there was going to be a big sense of darn, I should have voted, or darn, I should have voted for Hillary Clinton and not Bernie Sanders on a write-in in Michigan, right? Because that's what cost us the election. And then, but fear is a powerful motivator. And when you're in the out party, in party, out party, midterm effects, those are really based on being out of power. Fear that comes from having the other party's agenda happening before your eyes. And so, my work was getting people to appreciate the size of that effect, right? And then, moving into the strategy on election night 2020 is when I committed to leaving my old life behind and trying to find a way to fix the strategy, because we won the presidency, obviously, in 2020. And I knew it pretty early on election night that we were going to have what it needed. We needed to win the blue ball and thus the presidency, the 270. But, not 5 minutes later, the reports start coming in down ballot. And it's very clear Democrats are going to lose House seats. Okay. And I'm sitting there going, how do you have a crazy man telling you to drink bleach and killing 3,000 people a day, holding up? There was no COVID aid. They did the initial relief aid, which included, of course, the thing that they made a lot of PPP loans on, right? But after that, they didn't want to do any more stimulus or any more aid. In fact, they were sitting on a bill in the Senate called the Heroes Act, okay? If we were doing that and Republicans were campaigning against us, the presidency, the House, the Senate, the state legislative races, all on one message, right? And I recognized right away, if we can't win under the best conditions you can have, which was 2020 being, at the congressional level, the best conditions we could possibly have, that means in 2022, this is the past now, but then it was the future, we're going to get wiped out in the midterm effect, because the exact things that helped Democrats in 18 are going to turn against us now that we're the in party. And we already saw that in Virginia in 2021 with the gubernatorial race there.
Right.
And so I realized I have to find a way to get the party to understand how to do electioneering Republican style. And of course, that's what the book is all about.
Yeah. So let's mention that right now. You have a book. Let's tell everybody what the book is and where they can get it.
Sure. The book's called Hit 'Em Where It Hurts, How to Save Democracy by Beating Republicans at Their Own Game. And now I remember what you asked me about strategy, right? So I studied campaign strategy as a political scientist. I taught probably my campaigns and election voter behavior courses tended to be with a heavy influence on strategy, which is very different because as it turns out, most people don't pay attention to strategy, right? Mm-hmm. So for me, it was about, anthropologically studying, here's these two parties and here's how campaigns and elections work. And although the textbooks through these courses didn't really distinguish much between the two parties, there was obviously a lot of difference on how Republicans did it. I mean, Swift Boat Veterans for Truth, that's how they did persuasion. It wasn't persuasion, hey, I'm a great product, buy me, I'm George W. Bush. It was persuasion the way I'm teaching people to do it. Don't buy John Kerry, he's a stolen valor,
right,
loser, right? And so for me, as an academic was very aware of how different that we were doing electioneering. And so that's what made me so confident on election night in 2020 that A, we were doing it wrong, and B, I could do it better.
Okay, let's get down to some brass tacks. You have said that a lot of the Democratic campaigns that you looked at were doing it poorly, and that showed up in 2020 and again, I suppose, in 2022. So what are they doing poorly, and what would you do instead?
Yeah. So when I talk about these two strategic differences, like, and I use the Swift Vote Veterans for Truth, right? So Republican, let's say Republicans are running in Arizona, okay? They're going to run one message, one theme. Democrats are scary socialists, and they want to let, this year it's going to be brown people killing you, right? That's the theme. And
Right.
every candidate will talk about it, from Carrie Lake down to the state legislative, the House candidates in Arizona are all going to talk about this issue. And it's going to be the number one issue, and the media is going to cover it because they're talking about it, right? And that issue is doing double work for them. It is telling the Republican base, it's inflaming that turnout, but it's also attacking us in the swing bucket and pushing swing voters away from us. Okay.
Right.
So the most important thing I tell people is I'm not the messaging is part of it. In the back half of the book, it talks a lot about messaging and how to design it and deploy it effectively. But the messaging really is a branch thing, okay? What I'm trying to do first is get people to appreciate that our problems aren't up in the branches. Our problems are down at the roots and in the soil that we planted in. And the reason is the front half of the book, where as a political scientist, I bring you guys up to speed with two findings from political science. One of them is from 1957, and the other one's from 1980, and yet have never really gotten into the public consciousness. And the first one is that voters actually don't know a damn thing about government. Okay. Most people, if you know who Mike or Kevin McCarthy is or Mitch McConnell, you're weird. Okay. Like, average Americans can name the president. And the way that we found this out was, survey research when it first developed, so polls, right? When it first developed and people first got, most of the country covered in landline telephones, because that was still an ongoing process, believe it or not, up till the time when cell phones were invented.
Right.
So political scientists like me were sitting around and they're like, you know what? We have this new tool that we could use to find out what voters know about politics. Let's do it, right? And so this book, The American Voter, forms the seminal text for my discipline, for my specific area of concentration, American voter behavior. And the finding from the book is that other than who the president is, voters know absolutely nothing. Most of them can't name the three branches of government, let alone explain how they work, okay?
Wow.
If you asked America to name a famous judge, it will not be Justice Thomas. It will be Judge Judy, guys. Okay. Like
Wow.
that's yeah. And you're saying, wow, and that's okay, right? Because like that's why I dedicated my life to it. Because this is something that has been known for decades, A, and B, the entire Republican system is built on that acknowledgement of low civic engagement, low civic knowledge reservoir in the public, and that for them, everything begins and ends at the president. So if the gas prices are high, it's the president's fault. If, there's, whatever it is, there it's going to be the one person they know, which is the president. Okay.
Right.
And then they go on to write, but don't worry, you might find that disturbing, reader, that all you're walking around with people who can't, don't know anything about their system of government when it's a system of we the people, and so therefore we're operating the system, right? But don't worry, they say, because they have a clue that they can use. They have a cheat that makes sense of the political world for them without them actually having to know anything. And that cheat is the party identification, okay?
Right.
And they go on to write, how great would it be if the two parties were so different that you could just easily tell which one you're going to align with, right? So, classic example of be careful what you wish for, because of course, 50, 60 years later, what do we end up with? Two very separate, very distinct parties. And that's, of course, at the root of all that's killing us right now, democracy-wise, right? So, that's finding number one. I spent the first half of the book trying to be very, 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 very clear without getting too data wonky and writing an academic book about this reality, because it is a fact. Okay? And the reason it's so important, guys, is because our system, our entire soil and root system of our strategy and tactics is planted in a flawed assumption. And that a flawed assumption is that we have an informed and engaged electorate. Okay. Because no one is like you. And if you're listening to this show, watching this show, You are the 1%, okay? You're the information 1%, not the wealth 1%, but you're still a freak of nature. So, partisanship is the most important thing. I go through the book and I explain how most independents actually have a partisan, their closet partisans. So pollsters nowadays have learned to take them out in when we're looking at data, and we sort the partisans who lean independents, who say I lean Republican or Democrat, we sort them right in with the regular partisans because their vote choice behavior is always the same, okay? And so we're talking about maybe 10 or 15% of America, of the 50% of Americans who bother to vote, because I didn't mention that part. 50% about, right? We had 60% turnout in 2024, historic high. So about half of the adults that you're walking past in the streets don't vote at all.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So then of the ones that do, party is the be all end all because they don't know. I mean, even the voters, 20% of the voters are like you and I, and the other 80 knows very little. I mean, not much more than the non-voters do. Okay. But they have a sense of civic responsibility to vote. And so that party label becomes very powerful. So, believe it or not, this is the part of the lesson, like now that I'm, 3 or 4 months into book talks, people really have a hard time accepting this. And even though like you just received that information, and I saw you accept it. Okay. Like, I'm not picking on you, but like maybe 20 minutes from now, you'll say something like, oh, well, how's that? You know what I mean? Like, it's hard to internalize what I'm telling you. But what I'm telling you is that most of America has no idea abortion has been banned, let alone be able to tell you it was Donald Trump and the Supreme Court that did it. And so like if we take that and we accept that as truth, that I have to win an election in Arizona, what do I have to do? Our old view is, well, everyone knows everything and I have to go argue some fine points to try to sound, smarter and better or have a better platform or whatever, right? But what I'm teaching you guys is, no, dude, you got to get out there. It's going to be impossible to get one message to these tuned out people who don't have interest in politics, because interest is what drives this, not time. People are busy, but they know a shit ton about football, okay? People are busy, but they can tell you all about their favorite stuff, cooking, whatever it is. So it's interest-based. You're interested, I'm interested, they are not. And so we don't have that information. Then our strategy at the root levels then becomes information, right? We have to make sure the electorate hears at least one thing. And that one thing has to be, my MAGA extremist opponent is coming for your freedom, right?
Okay, yeah. So obviously, I hope everybody buys the book because we certainly need it. If you were advising Kentucky Democrats, not at the national level, but we've got out of 138 seats in the legislature, all the House and half the Senate is up. So that's 119 possible races. And out of 119, we have 45 that are actually competitive, that are actually contested. Everything else is either whoever won the primary or there wasn't even a primary. They're just in. So we have 45 races. If you were advising Kentucky Democrats on how to run this fall, what would you say to them about doing in a very red, what has recently been a very red state?
I mean, look, Andy Beshear already showed you guys the pathway to victory. Okay. It is. What did he do? Why did he win? Now, he might, I met the man once, and he might have a different opinion on how he won. I'm telling you how he won. He won because he had that ad of a 14-year-old girl who was pure Kentucky. And if you haven't seen this ad, you can Google it.
Oh, yeah.
Talking about how she would have been forced to have her rapist baby. And he made sure that the voters in Kentucky heard his opponent was a extremist that was coming for their freedom, right? So, and in Alabama, a couple months ago, Marilyn Lance, state house district down there, deep red Alabama. How did she win it? She went from losing it by like 15 points last cycle to winning it by some margin, some large margin. And she did it running on IVF and freedom, reproductive freedom, right? So the pathway to Kentucky or to anywhere else, if you're listening to, especially if you are in one of these swing contests, which there aren't many, but there are some down in Kentucky, your success or failure will come down to how well you communicate to your to that electorate that they're under threat from this MAGA extremism.
See, you're right about one thing, and that is that it's hard for me to accept some of this because I have spent my political life being upset with people who lie. And I actually, at one time, was a Republican and left that party because I got tired of the anger and the lies. And yes. I just, you know, it wasn't really policy originally. It is now because I have continued to move left in my adult life.
But I would argue, actually, you probably haven't moved that much, but they've continued to move very far right, right?
Well,
so yeah,
that could be.
Yeah.
so it you know, to come at this from the standpoint of not here's all the good that we could do for you, here's the good right. that we can put into the marketplace, and instead say you need to vote for us because the other people are horrible. Yeah. That just feels like the mirror of what the Republicans have done for years and years and years.
Well,
and
the book is How to Beat Republicans Playing Their Own Game. So,
I get that.
Let me
that.
Tell you this, though. I get it. I get where your feels. I get your feels because, and I say this in the book. Listen, person, reader. Like, I get you. I am you. Just that I'm able to compartmentalize. Okay, I don't like. I started my academic career and immediately focused in on polarization. That's what my dissertation's about, okay? Because I understood it was going to be very, very bad for American civic culture and for democracy. I could never have ever predicted, though, I'm writing this dissertation in 2012 to 2015, that 10 years later, we would be one election away from collapsing into fascism. And in a state like Kentucky, folks, is, you know, I'm going to be in Oregon when this happens. You guys are going to be under the gun, literally, in Kentucky, if yeah. Trump gets Project 25 enacted, right? So it makes me sick to contribute to polarization. But you do not rebuild your house while it's still on fire, okay? Mm. Just like Democrats in California, they got rid of partisan gerrymandering. Great, now we can't hold the house. Because everywhere else, every Republican state is gerrymandered to the hilt, right? Democrats, well, we Citizens United is bad. We're not going to take any corporate money. We don't want any of your money. Great. They've got 20 billionaires. And with it, the Federalist Society, Judicial Watch, the Heritage Foundation,
right.
Turning Point, right? So like, you know, yes, I want the world that you guys want to have too, but I'm a realist, right? I'm an unapologetic realist. And in to say, I'm telling you, if it makes you feel bad to attack a Republican and call them an extremist, I'm telling you now, next year, when you're watching Latinos get rounded up, Muslims get deported, trans people getting, people who had helped their children transition getting imprisoned, you're going to feel a lot worse. You're going to feel a lot worse. So like, I'm not asking, I mean, think about having to make the decision, should I hide immigrants in my closet from the Gestapo? That's going to be that's hard to do. What I'm asking you to do is a little bit of comfort zone departure compared to that, right?
Very challenging. But the problem I have is that in my deep heart of hearts, I know you're right. And this is how we are going to have to go if we want to save democracy. It doesn't do any good when you've got fascists at the gate to say, can't we all just get along?
We did it for 10 years and now we're at the precipice. I mean, that, to be clear, the thing that you want to do, and everyone wants to, I'm not picking you. This is, I mean, I'm so glad we're having this conversation because you're standing in for millions of people I have to talk to, right? Yes, it is. It's too late, right? We had these debates 10 years ago. We had Michelle Obama, you know, in 16, when they go low, we're going to go high. The reason it doesn't work, folks, if you read the book, is because human psychology is not designed that way. And we are special, kind of special psychology, psychologically. Like, there's a bell curve of things, right? Empathy, sympathy, collectivism, you know, things like that, that we're on the tail of that bell curve, okay? But we're still human beings, A. So loss aversion, it's easier to get someone to not buy something than it is to sell them something. Do you see what I'm saying? Psychologically, it's a lot easier to live. So like, what's easier? Convincing young people that Joe Biden's policy in Israel and Gaza is actually pretty good, or it's not that bad, or da 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 da, or convincing young people that if they don't vote for Joe Biden, they're going to lose their own rights, right? You can see it pretty easy, right? It's easier to convince somebody of B than A. And that's, you know, unfortunately, you know, we have designed a system that's, you know, based on a formed and engaged electorate, but also an assumption that, like, at the end of the day, most people are like us, where we get warm and fuzzy from messages about collectivism. We like outgroups, right? We care about the rights of others, even though it doesn't impact our own stuff, right? Like, that's not normal, folks, okay? It's only like 10% of the entire population that has those kinds of dispositions. So we're creating ads for liberals by liberals. And what we need to be creating is ads for regular people by liberals. And that means we have to stop letting the feels dictate everything.
Dr. Rachel Bitticoffer, author of, tell me the name again so I get it right.
That's all right. Hit Them Where It Hurts, How to Save Democracy by Beating Republicans at Their Own Game.
Right. I have to say that of all the interviews I've done, and I've done a bunch of them, this has been both the most challenging and the most enlightening. I really appreciate your time. I'm going to have to sit, like you said, I'm going to have to sit with it for a while.
Yes.
And think about it. Obviously, I've got the book on order, so I'll be reading it. And I perhaps will come back to you later in the summer and say, okay, I'm bought in. Now tell me what to do next.
There you go. I like it. And take your viewers on that journey with you, because, yeah, I do get it, guys. I 100% get it. And that's why I knew I had to personally devote my life to this, because I knew it was going to be very hard to make liberals be mean.
Dr. Bitticoffer, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much for having me.